Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Better Living. I'm your host, Nick Carissimi. Today we are talking with a man who's got a lot on his plate and a lot to offer. He is M.T. Webb. He is a master licensed social worker. He is a licensed chemical dependency counselor. He's the clinical director at N Concepts, and he is also an author. The name of the book, The Needy Greedy Dilemma, The Clashing of Cravings Within a Conflicted Mind. M.T. Webb, how are you doing?
I am great. Thanks for having me.
Well, I really appreciate you coming in. You made a big old long drive, and as I mentioned to you, I really appreciate it when people make the effort to come out here. So once again, thank you for doing that. Carrie Wilcox, friend of the show, she is with Medal for Valor, the Women's Veterans Ranch, and she's also with the Texas Veterans Commission, mentioned that you should come on the show, basically, is what came down to it. I reached out, and here you are. So we've got a lot to talk about today and a lot of different subjects, but I think the best way to do it is just to kind of talk about who you are and what you do. Let's talk first about N Concepts. All right, you're the clinical director there. What do you guys do there?
N Concepts is an idea I came up with working with different organizations. I said, okay, well, maybe it's time for me to kind of branch out on my own and doing groups for other people, and that's my specialty is psychodynamic groups. So I said, okay, well, maybe I can start doing this for myself. So I just contract with different agencies, and I actually provide group therapy and assessments. And one of the main things that I do is what they call SASE assessments for the Department of Transportation for people who need to go back to work. They've been DWI, and so they have to be assessed before they can go back to work. And that's one of the things that I do as well.
So it's continuing education, CEUs, I think is what you were calling them. So continuing education units. And substance abuse seminars, and you're also saying that there's a counseling element to almost all of this. So really what you're doing is you're providing education and assessment of people, essentially.
Exactly.
Okay. How did you get into this work? Because you have a very interesting backstory. You served in the military.
Yes, I did.
And the stuff you did in the military, to me, doesn't really translate to what you're doing now. And it's an interesting story. So how did you come to this work?
Well, actually, I was in the medical division, so I started off as a dental tech slash corpsman in the Navy.
Okay.
And in the Navy, even if you're a dental tech, you still get trained as a corpsman. So I had to learn all the field medical emergency procedures, and so that was really interesting. So I didn't know that when I signed the contract, that when war comes, you're a corpsman and you have to go with the Seabees, which is how I got stationed with the Marines in Camp Pendleton. And then from there, stationed at Port Hueneme, California, with NMCB-5, the battalion out of there. And that's when I worked with the CB battalion, and I was part of their medical division. But what made me get into the counseling field is that every time one of the guys would come in and they talk to me, and, you know, of course, my doctors are saying, hey, you know, we need to move this along. You know, we start talking about more than just their teeth or their broken ankle or the reason why they don't want to go back on the job. And I'm like, well, okay, maybe this might be something I might want to pursue when I leave the military. And that's how I got into being a counselor. And then, of course, my uncle, I never forget my uncle Frank, he had this magic bag, and I'm like, what is it that he has in his bag that as he drinks this Alexa or whatever it was, he feel different? Then I found out he was an alcoholic, and I'm like, okay. So that's my calling in life, and that's what I'm going to do.
So you worked on people physically in the military.
Exactly.
But this seed of working on their mind started getting into you. Was it something that you actually thought you were going to be able to do? How did this actually become a reality for you?
Actually, I really didn't think much about it. I think it was more of a natural process. And that's why I said, okay, it just came easy just to listen to other people and to listen to their concerns. And I'm saying, well, okay, well, this could be something that may actually be something I could do for a living. And though the doctors didn't like it because it took a lot of time, but it was just it was something that was just really easy for me. I'm like, okay, this may be it. This may be the thing.
A lot of education, a lot of time to do what you're doing. Were you prepared for that? Because I would think if you're going on the course that you have gone on, school is either going to be a real long, arduous process, or because you're interested, it zips by real quick.
And I think that's exactly what it was, because it was part of it was the ministry training, and part of it was the social work training. And I think that was, if I remember right, that was the first time I got all A's in school. Is when I went to undergrad school and when I went to social work school. Giving a shout out to the University of Southern Mississippi, home of Brett Favre, go Eagles.
How you deal with tough subject matter.
Right.
We're kind of joking around here, but you're a serious guy. You deal with substance abuse. You deal with suicide. Why that area of all the things that you could talk about? You talked about your uncle, so you'd been around substance abuse, those kind of things.
Right.
But sometimes that pushes people away from those subjects.
Exactly.
You ran towards it. Why specifically this field, these tougher subjects?
Right. And I think that was part of my military training, because we were taught with the especially being stationed with the Marines and the CBs, and being a corpsman with those guys, we were the guys that run in to help. We weren't the guys that were running out to help. And so that kind of just stuck with me, and never leave a guy behind. And that's, even till today, that's just something that you just don't do. So, and so it was a natural fit. And of course, I'd never forget when I was doing an internship, and they were selecting people to do interns. And no one wanted to go into substance abuse. So they said, hey, we have a substance abuse slot open. Anybody want to take it? And so I looked around. I'm like, yeah. So it's just a field, and it's unfortunate that it's just a field that is a difficult field, because you're dealing with clients that are not very receptive, not receptive to change, and very resistant. Coming from the background that I came from, I'm like, okay, this may be a good fit. And thank God for my mom, and bless her heart, bless her soul. She was very tough with us. So the military wasn't even...
It was easy.
It was easy. Yeah, I mean, I got my mom. You know, my mom was like, you know, if you don't go to school and beat up the bully, I'm going to beat you up. I'm like, okay. You know, that's okay.
A tough mom is no match for a DI.
Exactly.
Any
so
day.
I'm like, okay, this is a good fit. And again, a lot of those clients, matter of fact, my first internship was the Vet Center in Biloxi. And again, those... hardened guys, military guys like myself, hard drinkers, multiple DWIs, dishonorable discharges, the whole works. And those were the people I began serving.
I want to talk about both of those things, but I want to talk about the jump in between. So once you were done with the military, were you immediately in school to get on this path?
Right, exactly.
All right, so from one straight into the other.
Exactly.
Now, did your wanting to work in the field that you're in, was that because of being a veteran and seeing the alcoholism, substance abuse, and obviously suicide that goes on, was that the driving factor there? Right. Were the two tied for you?
Right. And particularly after the Gulf War, because one thing you're not going to see a lot of vets or hear a lot of vets do it, and a lot of vets aren't going to talk about their time in the military, and I'm one of them. But that's where a lot of the damage holding on to that is where it's really difficult, because you don't process it. You just kind of repress it and suppress it. And you can't say that it didn't happen, but it did happen. And then, of course, and I note this at the end of my book, when you think about the suicide rate, the high suicide rate is among men between the ages of 50 and 59, middle-aged combat veterans. Because, again, as they get to that point in their life, well, okay, I should be here. I should have more money. I should have more of this. And they're not there. And that, my heart just went out to that. And then as I began to approach that age, it really hit home. So I'm like, okay, this is something that I really need to dedicate my life to.
Does End Concept specifically work with veterans? Is this organization open to anybody? How did you make that jump?
Right. When I started the company, I actually was working at John Peter Smith Hospital, and I started building End Concepts on the side. And I would see clients on the side. And because we didn't have a lot of veterans we would see at the local hospital. And again, we're talking about the county hospital, and we would just see a lot of the county people. But again, my heart was with the veterans too. So with that platform, it gave me an opportunity to see more than just the Saturday night person who comes in and they drink too much. So I got an opportunity to work with a lot more people.
So that's the reason why you wanted to start in concepts. Right. You were already working at a hospital. You're working with veterans. You're doing what you want. What was that additional thing that you wanted out of End Concepts?
To be able to teach other professionals and to be able to teach other nonprofits, okay, this is what happens when you're working with this particular population. Because with working with drug and alcohol, because a lot of people don't want to work with it, I said, okay, well, this is an opportunity for me to, with the expertise and the net that I have for it, that I can teach other people that, you know what, yeah, working with addicts is difficult, but here's how you can do it. And that was what led to also me forming In Concepts.
Were people unfamiliar with how to deal with veterans? Was the literature not there? What was lacking as a professional in that field that you saw?
I think the biggest thing that was lacking was the severity of the loneliness, the isolation. And that a lot of people say, people who commit suicide are cowards. No, that's not really what it is. Is that I mentioned this in the book, the real reason why people commit suicide, particularly veterans, is because it just simply hurts to live. And the isolation can almost be deafening. So I'm like, okay, this is really an area that I need to teach other people about and other professionals about. And especially with the nonprofits who get a veteran into their facility, and they may not understand exactly what those specific needs are. And it's like, well, how can they be isolated? They have their buddies. Well, military guys don't talk like, they don't process about, you know what, today I feel like blowing my brains out. We don't do that. We don't want to bother anybody. We're the guys that go in and help everybody. Now we need help. So it's a different transition.
So a lot of your work is actually helping other organizations to figure out how to navigate these waters.
Exactly.
Do you feel, is that really where you are at, do you think, as a professional, more of an educator? Is that where you think that you excel?
Yeah, I think that's, particularly at this time in my life, too. And again, it's always, I think the counseling aspect of it is so second nature because I've done it for so long. But now to broaden into now educating other therapists and other nonprofits that there is a right way and there is a not so right way to work with these very, very difficult populations.
Yeah. Why is it important to say that there's a wrong way? You avoided saying there's a wrong way.
Yeah, because I never like to say that there's a wrong way to do something. It may not be the best way or the most amiable way. So, and I'm not one to criticize other people. And I'm like, but there's a best way to do it. And one of the things I've learned by trial and error, working with the difficult population, here's what I've learned over the years, and a lot of it is what I put in the book, too. And not just helping just the clients, but helping those people who help other people.
M.T. Webb is the clinical director at End Concepts. He is also an author. His book, available now on Amazon, is The Needy Greedy Dilemma, The Clashing of Cravings Within a Conflicted Mind. How long have you been at this? How long have you been with End Concepts?
I started End Concepts in 2013. And, 2013. I think I'm getting older, Nick, too.
I can't tell how old you are. That's why I had to ask. All right. That at least kind of paints a little bit more of a picture, which is definitely helpful with this. Now, as we've been saying, you've done a lot with education. You are currently working on your PhD in psychology. So, again, more education, working on this more. Right. Where are you trying to get to? You're a published author. You're a counselor in multiple disciplines. To me, this means that you're looking for something different. So what do you want to achieve with your doctorate?
We want to do one thing that I'm really hoping that we can do more is to do more research as it relates to suicide, as it relates to suicide and isolation. And I didn't understand that until I kind of went through some personal things of my own. To where there's a difference between lonely and being alone. And if there's any criteria that I've seen that we really need to really look at, and it's to look at how suicide is coded in the DSM. The DSM-5 is one of our quote-unquote Bibles in mental health. The other one is the ICD, is the International Registry of Mental Disorders. So you have both of these books. One book really does a really good job. The ICD does a really good job of saying, okay, suicide here's suicide, here's what it looks like. Whereas the DSM-4 is still is under a subject to be studied. That kind of sends a message, and that
is it being studied way that it should be? Is it DSM-4 and then five is the newest edition?
Well, DSM-5 is the latest edition.
Okay.
And the thing is that suicide is listed more as a symptom of a disease or a symptom of PTSD. Suicidal behavior is not a standalone diagnosis in the DSM. And that's not a slight against the DSM. It's not, but it's just the ICD is an international manual. So 193 countries have input into that. Whereas the DSM is from the American Psychiatric Association. So they have changed the game with DSM-3 to where the beautiful part of what they've done is they made it to where we have classifications and we have this construct of what a mental disorder looks like. And they changed the game with DSM-3. And then the ICD was followed. But what the ICD has done is say, okay, but we're saying that suicide, here's what suicidology is, and we're coding it this way. And that is significant because it gives validity that this is a standalone phenomenon. And the DSM does great as it relates to it as a symptom. But here's the deal. That doesn't occur among dead people. That occurs within life. So 10% of people who commit suicide actually have no mental illness at all. So I think about it. A great example I can give you. Here I am, fall semester, last semester, and I'm trying to find my classes, and there's so much life on campus at UNT, and I'm just having a great time. I get a text, and, you know, someone died. I'm like, well, okay. I go to church, and you know, we're having a great time at church, and we get the news that someone's committed suicide in our Bible study. And it's like, death occurs in life, not in debt. So to write about it in a creative way to where people would still want to read it, that's why I wrote the Nitty Gritty, to write it, because it occurs in, suicide occurs in life as you live. And that's why I wrote the book the way I wrote it. So that's why when I emailed you, I said, no, it's not a suicide book. It's a life book. And suicide happens in life. And so it was very, very important for me to capture that aspect of it, that suicide is about three things: unmet needs, confliction of mind, and the stigma of, okay, I don't need help. And those are three things that just makes it worse. And so my job, again, what I want to do as a researcher with my PhD is to research those areas, not just among the veteran population, but to let people know that death occurs in life among the living, and we can't be afraid to address this topic.
Explain how that relates to the title, Needy Greedy. Now, when I hear needy, greedy, I don't necessarily think of suicide.
Exactly.
And I certainly don't think that the word needy is a good thing. I don't hear the word needy. I hear that as being a negative term. Also, same with greedy.
And therein lies the dilemma. When did the word needy actually become a bad word? And matter of fact, I use three definitions of the word needy. And none of them are the needy that we hear in society today. And when I looked up the word needy, and I used three different definitions, but the one that really stuck with me was that, quote, a needy person is a person subject to oppression and abuse who needs help and needs deliverance. Okay. But what we think here in America of a needy person, we think of someone who obsessively hoards all the attention, gratification, and just smothers all the attention from a room. That's not an emotionally needy person. That's an emotionally greedy person. And that's the difference. So now if I'm called needy, I have a legitimate need, but I don't really understand what needy means. And then when I hear someone call me needy, I'm like, well, there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with me affirming my needs. No. Well, there's a difference between you having legitimate needs and you being emotionally greedy, which is one of the connections that I found with a lot of my clients, even the two people who I wrote the book for, is that the stigma of asserting my needs. And one of the ladies, again, that I shared, which was really interesting, she said, I need you. Well, she wasn't going to get her needs met in that relationship because this guy was committed to someone else. And she took her own life. And I'm like, okay. So the problem was that she had needs, and that was okay. But this was the wrong way to get it met. So the connection between needy and greedy and suicide is that the word needy is actually not a bad word. It's actually a good word. I think we've kind of Americanized it to be something bad, and it's really not. And therein lies the problem. And I said, okay, I shouldn't take a PhD for me to have to learn and try to teach other people this. But it's already, I mean, you can look in the dictionary and you look at the word needy, and it does not mean what we see it to mean today. And therein lies the connection, because it's like, I have this legitimate need and it needs to be affirmed. So now when someone calls me needy, now I feel that, okay, well, maybe my need is not as important. Maybe I'm not as important. And now you deal with the confliction of mine, is that I have this legitimate need. Am I being greedy or am I wrong for this? And that's why I wrote the book.
Is the idea figuring out the middle path between being needy and being greedy, is that the way to success, understanding those differences and trying to find a middle path, or do I misunderstand that?
Now, to affirm your needs is actually healthy. And that's why I went at length to describe that. That clearly the emotionally greedy person, that's pretty obvious that, okay, they're not in a position to where they're going to look at their needs and say, okay, my needs are important. It's actually the opposite. My needs are important, and they're more important than your needs. Well, okay, well, that's what emotionally greedy people do. But it's the emotionally needy person that feels that I don't have anything to offer, but I have this need. You call me needy, and needy is bad, but needy is not bad. And therein lies the conflict. And therefore, since needy is bad, then I have this need, well, then I must be bad, and my needs aren't important. And now I feel a way about myself. And the ultimate result is that now you have this conflicted mind, compromised mind, and maybe I don't need to be here. And the end result is that that person takes their life.
For people that are in that position, let's say, what's a good way to describe where they're at? We don't want to say needy. I think it's going to be hard, and it's going to take a while to reclaim the word needy in a sense.
Yes,
so
is.
How should people refer
it
to themselves or those around them that they need something, but we don't want to put a negative stigma to it?
Yeah.
How should we frame that?
Yeah, and again, this is how I frame it in the book, is that it's okay to say that I have this need. And this is particularly hard with veteran population, to where with vets, they're, again, like I told you earlier, we're used to coming in and saving the day. We're not used to being in need. And this whole campaign that I'm going to these different cities and trying to reclaim the word needy is to affirm that, you know what, it is okay to ask for help. And I've been in that situation. And one of the best things I did in coming to Cary and other people is the best thing I did was to say, hey, you know what, I'm one of those guys that's in need, and it's okay for me to be in need. And I think it's almost life-saving if you do reclaim it.
That is my question. Once you admit that, what does that do for that person, for those around them? Is it a way to finally get the help that you need?
Yes.
Is it a way, does it keep suicidal thoughts away? What is the benefit of finally recognizing that you do need help and that you're not needy, but you have needs that need to be met?
Yeah. One of the main benefit that I found is that you're not by yourself, and that there's confirmation that this need that I have, that it's not wrong. And this is not a wrong thing to be in need. And that's the thing that that's liberating. And when you reach out, a lot of times, I think that's too, that which is also why I'm on this campaign. Because people that are ill-informed, that don't know, and when someone does reach out, one of the worst things you can do is when someone reaches out to help and you don't get that help. And it's kind of like, and the best example that I like to use, it's kind of like going to the hospital to get your arm healed, and you go there and nobody knows what they're doing. That's not a good feeling.
No.
Yeah. So, but that's exactly how someone feels who's in a conflicted state of mind, is that who can I process this with? And when I say I have this need, it's almost like it's almost, and I see it in the eyes of clients who I've worked with. It's almost like taking a balloon, and you and it's like it's a relief. Okay, I'm not crazy. I'm not abnormal. So it's okay if I have a legitimate need. That this need, though it may be unusual, is this is okay. And just having that confirmation in of itself is liberating. And Nick, this is the honest to God truth, I have 7 kids. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 kids.
And what are their names?
Oh, Bryson, Ashley, Mookie, or Robert, Jasmine, Robin, Caleb. Did I miss one?
I lost count.
Me too. And Bryson.
There you go. All right. That's why I always have to ask. When people say they have over 4 kids, I have to hear them name.
Yeah. And they would choke me if I didn't get it right. And the thing I learned, which is also one of the main reasons I wrote this, all 7 of those kids have unique needs. Now, I hear parents say, well, I raise all my kids the same way. As a therapist, I'm like, okay. As a father, I'm like, that's probably not exactly the truth, because each one of them have different needs. Bryson, wonderful young man. Love him. He's working for the state right now, and he's got a great job. I didn't have to really come down hard on him, even though he's a football player, right? Big guy. I never had to come down hard on him. The youngest one, Jasmine, never had to come down hard on her. But everybody in the middle.
Mookie was the real problem, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, you would know it, right? But actually, it was CJ Caleb was the problem. And he's the only one that has the Bible name, so I don't know what that's all about. But him and I fell out so many times. But again, each one had different needs. One wanted more hugs than the other. So if I was, and Jasmine was the one that wanted more hugs than the rest of them. So if I was to refer to her as needy, that would have crushed her. No. And she's not emotionally greedy. She just required more hugs than the rest of them did. You know, the big guy, he didn't want me to hug him. But she just, every now and then, she has her hands up. And that's what made me come with this title, is that, wait a minute, just because she requires more hugs than the other one, that doesn't make her emotionally greedy. She just has some unique needs. And I have to be sensitive to those.
It's a very, very interesting look at this whole subject. And I think that this is definitely applicable to your life and dealing with other people. I know that you deal a lot with companies and businesses and helping them to train people. And like you're saying, also nonprofits. It's fascinating. The book is entitled The Needy Greedy Dilemma, The Clashing of Cravings Within a Conflicted Mind. MT Webb is the clinical director at NConcepts. You can find them online at nconcepts.net. He's going to be a doctor soon. He's almost there. Where are you getting your schooling done?
You on University of North Texas in Denton.
Down at UNT.
UNT. Love it.
All right, man. And you said that you were on tour real quick. How is this tour going? Where are you going? How does this work?
We are. I'm going to be in Fort Worth tentatively the 27th. And then I'm moving to Waco, to Austin. And then I'll end for July. I'll actually be home for a little while. So I'm going to be in Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Gulfport, and Hattiesburg. So just, again, a little bit of a book tour here. So I'm getting a chance to travel. So
do you like it?
Oh, the audience is heavenly, but the traveling is hell, as the old song says.
I would figure that being in the military, you were all over the place. You told me off mic, you were in a lot of different places. Right. I would think that you were into travel. You're done with it?
Oh, no, I love traveling. Just the thing is this... And then I love driving. So, and then a lot of these places I'm just driving to. So that's going to really be fun. And I got invited to go to Arizona to fly off. There's a suicide conference there in October. So I'll be speaking out there as well.
All right, man. Well, I wish you the best of luck with everything. Once again, the book, The Needy Greedy Dilemma, The Clashing of Cravings Within a Conflicted Mind, available now on Amazon. More details about all the good work that MT is doing at nconcepts.net. Sir, I wish you the best of luck, and I really appreciate you stopping by today.
Thanks for having me.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.